Shall we begin?
We shall.
Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin. This is just Jim Morrison from a Doors concert. It wasn't anything too crazy. Hello and welcome. If you're looking for a talk on One Directory to rule them all, William is talking next door. I am not William. But it may be a very good talk, so I encourage you to go there. No takers? All right. I'm Martin. I've been a member of the Samba team for a few years now. I also work for IBM, doing storage on the Spectrum Scale product. But for many years, I worked for IBM's Linux Technology Center, trying to make Linux better. So this is a talk about two improvements that we've made in CTDB testing in about the last 12 months. The two improvements are we've separated out something so that you can run lots of local CTDB daemons on your local machine using a simple command, and the CTDB test, well, I'll go into it in a minute. Okay. And the other thing is that we've had a thing called AutoCluster for about 12 years that we've used for building real clusters and testing CTDB, and we finally got around to completely rewriting it. Apart from maybe the make file and the RPM spec file, not one line of code remains. To that end...
So he's going to now start the autocluster. So this is the command to actually now build the automated cluster with three nodes,
yep,
and one test node. And it also, so this is a complete setup for clustered Samba testing. So it includes a AD node, cluster nodes, and a test node.
And in about, I don't know, 5 to 12 minutes, that should finish and should be ready for the second half of the talk. However, no, it's live. And it is running via a live network connection here and via a VPN into IBM, into machines where there was a power failure 2 days ago due to a big storm. We may not have a complete demo there. Okay. So testing with CTDB local daemons. Okay, why would we want to do this? Okay, CTDB is this thing that runs on multiple nodes, and the reason is that we want to test some of the CTDB functionality on a local machine, and that might be here on the laptop, it might be a machine where we are doing regression testing for some of the functionality, it might be in Samba auto build. We run all but one of CTDB's test suites in the Samba auto build for every push of code to Samba. We can run this stuff in GitLab CI using a single machine. In the past, this was implemented. Our simple test suite had some code in it, so it could start generate some config and start several daemons on the local machine. The daemons were started by a test at the beginning of the test suite and stopped by a test at the end. And that was a bit clunky. The good thing is that when we didn't need to start these daemons between tests, it made the test suite run faster. It's possibly error prone because you get state going between tests. So one of the things we wanted to do, which I don't think I've mentioned in the next slide, is to make all the tests, each individual test, stand alone. So why make this stand alone? Well, it's a useful development and debugging tool. Amate and I are frequently trying to start CTDB on our laptops just to see if something we've just done has worked, and we want to look at the logs, and we just want to make it work. So it's useful. There was some interest in getting SMBD, real clustered Samba, running in auto build in this sort of mode. And I thought factoring out this code so that SMBD testing could use it would be cool too. I also have a little task where I'm trying to figure out how many local daemons we can run on a machine and how well recovery scales with multiple nodes and different size databases. So this is a really good tool for just saying, let's start lots of daemons and run some tests against them. It's also kind of a cool hack, and that's always a good reason for doing things, right? Okay, so in the Samba repository, we're sitting in the CTDB directory, and there, in the tests subdirectory, there's a local daemons.sh command. And it has a bunch of subcommands that you can see here. And I'm just going to quickly run through those and demonstrate them. So the first thing we need to do is set up. Now, most of the options you see here are just not necessary for general debugging and use. Some of these options here are to support specific tests that we have in our test suite. The most exciting one is probably just the number of nodes. So, hey, let's do that. Okay, so first I'd like to show you that I have nothing up my sleeve because I am wearing these very long, elegant sleeves. So I have no foo directory. Now to save typing, I'm going to run the local daemons command. The first argument here is the directory name where the state is going to go. And then I'm running the setup command and I'm going to set up 100 nodes to run on my laptop. Or 100 CTDBDs. Historically, we configure one node differently just to make sure that we can do a sort of asymmetric public address handling. Okay, now if we have a look in the foo directory, there is a directory for each node and a nodes file and a public addresses file. If we look in any of these directories, does anyone want to pick a number? 58, that's very important. Okay, so there's a config file, a database directory, and a bunch of other supporting stuff. And I guess one important thing is that since we've just done the setup, there are no... Really? Well, I could stick it in the stand, but thank you. How's that? Closer? It's tight. In fact, I can just lean it. It works. Is good? Rock and roll. Okay. So that's the setup command. It doesn't do much. Sets up state, but does not start any daemons. There's a canned demo in the slides for people who want to look later. But it's not as exciting as watching it live. Okay, the next exciting command is the start command. You give it the directory, you give it the start command, you give it the nodes that you want to start up. So I'm just saving typing again. So let's start 58. That's a cool number again. We're done. And now we've got two processes running, and that happens to be the main CTDB daemon and the recovery daemon. So there's a factor of two here. Then we might start nodes 50 to 59. So we'll include that one because otherwise I can't do the mathematics. If we start getting 11 nodes running, I'm in trouble. Okay. Now I've got 20 processes running. And this isn't terribly amazing. And now we'll just say all. I'm just trying to convince you that there's some fine-grained control possible. And now we've got 200 CTDB processes running, representing 100 CTDB daemons. You can see at the top here that the load on my laptop is going nuts, but it's just starting to settle down. But, beautifully, memory usage, which is to the right of the CPU... No. Memory usage is still quite low. It's somewhere over here. We're not using a lot of memory. Anyone can do this. You could do this on a Raspberry Pi. Well, yeah, this thing has 8 threads or something. All right, we'll skip the canned start demo. Okay, now we have the onNode command, which just sits on top of the onNode command that gets shipped with CTDB and would normally just use SSH. So we should do a demo of that. And the first thing we can sanity check is that when we talk to the CTDB running on supposedly on node 58, it knows it's 58. And if we ask for that node's status, it says it's okay. If we ask all the nodes for their status, I could scroll back, but they're all okay. So CTDB has come up okay. Samba, nothing like Samba is running here. It's just CTDB. We can look at the IP address layout if we want to, and we can find out that on node 99, on node 37 near the bottom, the address ending in .99 is assigned. So we can do all your standard CTDB stuff here. And then it gets completely unexciting. You know, then there's a stop command. We've got one less daemon running. We stop 55 to, 74. We'll get one error message because we couldn't talk to one of the daemons. And then, we shut down the rest of them. We'll get a certain number of errors for the ones that are already shut down. So nothing mind-boggling. The next thing you might want to do is look at the logs. So I'll keep it simple and just say, dump logs all into, log.merged. So, the time stamp in the logs is a nice high definition one. They sort nicely, and the dump logs command will take the logs for whichever nodes you care about and merge them. So, we started node 58 first. We did a whole bunch of stuff. And at the end, we shut down all of the nodes. And, if we go to somewhere in the middle, we'll see more interactions between the nodes. But, this is useful for debugging. One of the things you can do with this is if you're running this on a remote machine, it's really easy to just pull the directory back to your laptop and examine the logs, or do the dump logs remotely and just get one log file back representing everything that just happened over there so that you can debug. Okay, say you wanted to interact with something else and that something else needed to know where the sockets were. There's the socket, the path to the socket for node 1, and if you want them all, you can just print them all out and then configure your smb.conf with all of those socket paths, and then your smbds can talk to their own can each talk to their own CTDBD. So it's really simple to use. So how does it work? Of course, it's shell script, because that's nice and simple. It's only about 450 lines. We did some of this work, or most of this work, for Samba 4.9, I think, for CTDB in Samba 4.9. If an environment variable called CTDB test mode is set, then CTDBD, CTDB, and a bunch of other things, they look in the directory where CTDB base is pointing, and they look for all of their config, they drop their logs there, they put their socket there. So CTDB just runs in this stupid mode where everything is in that directory. So yeah, everything is relative to CTDB base when you're running in test mode. The local daemon script sources a little bit of our test infrastructure. Yes, Volker? This does not use socket wrapper. You can get it to use socket wrapper if you want to. So there's this minus capital S option, and you just point to the socket wrapper library, and then all of the LD preload magic happens, and everything just uses socket wrapper. So it's optional. The onNode command knows about this onNode SSH variable, which says, hey, don't use SSH, use this. And local daemons sets that to point back to its own SSH command, which just sets CTDB base to the right place so the right socket gets used. So it's all nice and self-contained, just works. So hopefully somebody will find that useful. We can talk about that, Volker. And of course, our simple test suite used to have this all built in, and when we factored it all out, we naturally reworked the code in the simple test suite, the local daemons code in there, which is now just almost stubs that call into this. So it's very simple. So anytime somebody runs a Samba auto build, they're running this thing already. And that's all I've got to say about that. So what else? Okay. Does anyone have any questions about the local daemons thing? We can talk afterwards if you think it's going to be useful. If you think it's stupid and I just wasted your time, just please throw some fruit. No fruit? Okay.
How's the progress on the autocluster build?
I was just about to say, let's check the progress of our autocluster build. Oh, well, you look at that. That's excellent. That took 13 minutes to build a cluster of, you know, three CTDB nodes, a test node, a base node that you could use to... that is a test node, isn't it? A build node and an AD node. And that's pretty cool. We'll go back to that in a minute. So I'll tell you what autocluster is. So first of all, what was autocluster before version 1? So there's an autocluster Git tree. You know, in some theory we could create a website, but that would be effort. And Tridge said to me one Friday, he said, I'm getting really sick of recreating these virtual machines. And, you know, this was 2008. Nobody else was really doing this. And he said, do you think you could write a script to just, you know, could you look at the way I've set it up, or could you work with me when I set it up and just write a script? And I went, yep, I'll do that on Monday. Tridge being Tridge, we came in to work on Monday morning, and Tridge said to me, hey, I've got the first version of AutoCluster working. So, yeah. So it started off as a bash script. It had a bunch of kickstart scripts, so you could create a base image. It came with a bunch of libvirt XML templates and supporting scripts, and basically just used a shell include file for config. And we have been beating that thing to death for 10 years, using it to run regression testing. And it's been surprisingly good. So it's used to create and configure virtual clusters for testing CTDB. It didn't try to solve a general problem. You know, Tridge had an itch he wanted to scratch, which was CTDB testing. If he'd had a bigger itch to scratch, we would have had something like OpenStack or Vagrant years earlier. But we didn't. So one thing to note here is that this predates Chef, Vagrant, OpenStack, Ansible. It doesn't predate Puppet, which, you know, you can use to configure your stuff. But, yeah, for its time, it was a very neat hack. Soon after he wrote the first version, Tridge went, eh, and threw it over to me and said, do something with this, please. In 2014, so there wasn't much development. It was mostly cleanup and making it run on the next version of RHEL 6, or having nodes running the next version of RHEL 6. But in 2014, there was a bit of a spike of activity, mostly by me, to just try and separate out the configuration stage because I knew changes were in the wind. So what was wrong? Well, it only supported RHEL or CentOS clusters using libvirt. So, you know, no containers, we'll get to that later, and no other way of doing virtualization. The creation of the base images with the Kickstart magic was really, really fragile and horrible. But we had specific things that we needed in the base image. So, you know, even though other people started building images, we couldn't really pull them from somewhere else. I'm going to have to move. The other thing is we got stuck at RHEL 6.9. When RHEL 6.10 came out, we tried building a base image, creating a cluster, and it just fell over somewhere. And I just went, this is hopeless, and I'm tired of touching this fragile stuff. Early in the RHEL 7 cycle, we tried some versions of RHEL 7 and got things working with a lot of effort. But from RHEL 7 to RHEL 7 version, things bit rotted. So this whole base image creation was just terrible. So the whole thing was quite a mess and unmaintainable, didn't work well. Large parts have since been done a lot better, right? There are other ways of creating bunches of VMs and configuring them. Tim Potter, Samba team member, former Samba team member, not sure how he sees himself. He gave me a Chef demonstration in late 2014, and I thought, yeah, something like this is the way to go. Michael Adams demonstrated Vagrant here, in fact, right here, at Samba XP in 2015. And, you know, that looked good. And, of course, we were stuck. You know, we don't want to test on RHEL 6.9 forever. So, come up with a plan. So the main thing to do is have less stuff and rewrite our new stuff on top of other people's stuff. Because that way, when our stuff doesn't work, we can blame them. That's always a good thing. Read reviews, people post things on articles on LWN about some of the relevant technology, read a whole bunch of stuff, read some tutorials of these different things, read some documentation, decided on Vagrant. I can blame Michael for that. That's good. Dug out his Git repo and took a look about how to get started, and that seemed cool. And, you know, there's this should make it really easy to use an alternate OS on the cluster nodes. Because, you know, we're not stuck with creating some particular base image or whatever. And, you know, heck, Vagrant does containers as well as VMs, so we should be able to do containers, right? Right. The other choice ended up being Ansible. It's mature, it's pretty declarative, and the only thing you need on the nodes is SSH. You don't need some Java blob thing or whatever that Chef needs. I mean, Chef needed something very big, and I immediately blotted it out of my mind. So Ansible seemed like the way to go. So, you know, we came back from the summer break in January, as everyone does, right? Cool. And I said to Amitai, I've got an idea. We could make this a Google Summer of Code project. And he went, that is a cool idea. And it's a cool idea because it would give somebody a chance to do it, and also it would mean that we wouldn't have to do it. But there was one thing we weren't sure about. It'd have to be feasible. How do we determine if it's feasible? Volker says do it. So we installed Vagrant and we got started. I'm not going to spend too much time on this slide because we could be here all day. But we decided to, because we were using libvirt before, the old autocluster used libvirt templates, we decided not to go with the native VirtualBox support that Vagrant has, but to instead use the sort of third-party Vagrant libvirt plugin. It turned out that there was a bug where starting a cluster with shared storage was racy. It was a simple time of check to time of use bug where they said where each node would go, does the shared storage exist? No. Okay, I'll create it. And then they would fall over. It took them 8 weeks to merge a fix for that. Mounting a file system from the host is something we've always done in our test clusters, on our test cluster nodes. It needs NFS packages. They're not in the base image or the box, so they need to be installed up front by Vagrant. But then Vagrant cancels everything if it determines the network is too slow, and there's probably some way around that, but I just thought, no. So don't install packages in Vagrant, which means we don't get to use Vagrant's shared or synced folders. We tried to use the Vagrant caching thing. It's unreliable. It also needed NFS. Installing packages, no, that times out. Vagrant time zone, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes network interfaces don't come up. Rebooting was an issue. So what to do? Use Vagrant for as little as possible. Little Vagrant file, 120 lines, plus a couple of very short scripts. We load a YAML configuration. We configure the very basics using the most basic stuff in Vagrant. So we tell it to look for shared block devices. We configure some proxies for the nodes based on the host proxies, private networks, and we don't make them controlled by Network Manager, otherwise everything seems to break when you reboot. We add a default route, and things are good. Then the only other thing we do is we configure passwordless SSH access for root, both from the host machine to the nodes and between the nodes. We took a leaf out of Vagrant's book there, and in the old autocluster, we used to actually modify the host's file so that you knew, so that you could figure out how to SSH into a node. However, this time we just generate an SSH config snippet and drop it into a file in a directory where it gets included. And in theory, this means you don't need to be root running autocluster, but we haven't tested it yet. The other thing is in Vagrant, there's a very simple test to just say, you know those IP addresses we asked you to put on the nodes, Vagrant? Are they there? If not, we're going to fail hard because sometimes they're not. And not sure if that was a libvirt Vagrant thing or a Vagrant thing. Okay, next thing to do is configure the nodes via Ansible once we've got these very minimal nodes up. So some initial experiments. You know, there's the whole thing that that Ansible tries to be declarative, and in some cases you can tell it what you want instead of how you want to do it. And there are lots of modules to do that sort of thing. The plays, in theory, the plays should also be idempotent. If you run an Ansible play twice, the second time it should have no effect, and Ansible should, you know, it logs at the end what changed. So if you run it twice, they should have no effect. I read the best practices guide for working with playbooks. If you ever want to use Ansible, please do that. Then I read it again because it was awesome. The way you can structure a playbook in Ansible to handle multiple roles and multiple nodes and different types of nodes is just really, really, really good. Started implementing the stuff that we had in shell snippets and all sorts of stuff in the old auto cluster, and ended up with some Ansible configuration that was, you know, less than 1,200 lines. And that's pretty good. That configures the underlying stuff on the nodes like NTP, resolve.conf. If something's using a cluster file system, if a node needs a cluster file system on it, it installs the packages, mounts, installs CTDB, installs Samba, configures those things, all within those 69 files. So it's cool. Here's our site playbook. It imports a separate playbook for each type of node at the top. And for example, the NAS node type is the one we're most interested in, because that's the one that runs Samba and CTDB and NFS. So the NAS.yaml playbook just runs against the NAS nodes, which autocluster squirrels away in a file. And then it just has these roles: common ClusterFS, which means install the cluster file system packages, set up the repository so you can install the NAS packages, do CTDB, set up your storage, and set up Samba and NFS. So didn't actually look at what other people had done here, just decided to try and learn Ansible. There are all of these roles. Most of them you just saw, but there's also an Active Directory role that we used for configuring the Active Directory server, and there's a build role so that we can create build nodes in our cluster for building CTDB, and also use that role to help us build Samba. So the common role, everything's nicely structured. In the top half, there's the operating system specific stuff, which is install packages, configure the firewall, and set up NTP. The NTP one's only up there because the package names and the service names tend to be different between, say, Debian and Red Hat. And then there is also some generic tasks where we turn off SE Linux, do some auto cluster specific stuff, set up the host file, set up resolve.conf, and do some final SSH tweaks, and some other stuff which wouldn't fit on the slide. And then there are files corresponding to each of those. There's a subdirectory for generic and a subdirectory for Red Hat. The nice thing here is, without changing the main playbook, if you want to support Debian here, you should just be able to create a tasks Debian directory next to the Red Hat one, copy the YAML files across, because who'd want to retype all of that stuff, and just make the minor changes you want so it works on Debian. So I would imagine that in less than 2 days, somebody should be able to make this work with Debian clusters. The other one that's worth looking at is the storage role. Again, there's a variable called clusterfs.type. In our case, I only implemented anything for GPFS, but it would be very easy to set clusterfs type to, say, clusterfs in the config, and then just create a clusterfs. Oh, this is going to hurt. Create a clusterfs clusterfs.yaml file, and have clusterfs support, or, you know, pick your cluster file system. 10, we're rocking, thank you. Okay, so there was this Ansible stuff and this Vagrant stuff. Stupidly, I did the Vagrant stuff first, because I wanted to integrate this all into our bash script as I went, but as it turns out, I had to do the Ansible stuff first. So I integrated those things into our wonderful bash script, and that was pretty easy. Both of them use a YAML configuration file. It's generated by a shell script from our old shell include file, generating YAML in bash. So I thought to myself, instead of doing this, could I just write the configuration in YAML, write a Python script to parse it, And the bash script only really needed about three of the configuration values. So, you know, I could write this thing to parse the config in Python and spit out three shell assignments. That was a really cool idea. Because, you know, I was doing this incrementally. I was going to have individual commits. Of course I can do that. There's really not a lot of the bash script left. Yeah, it was really, really small by the time I finished. So, of course, why wouldn't I invoke Vagrant and Ansible from the Python script? And then it's all just a small Python script. This is great. How much Python? This is the commit for the Python. So it's really, you know, 730 lines of Python. This doesn't include... I added some host setup so you can set up the host machine as well by running an Ansible playbook. But it does include the shared storage volume creation and deletion, because Vagrant did that so badly that I decided to talk to libvirt directly to create the file for the shared volume. How much was removed? This is the beautiful one. If you have fallen asleep, you know, 7,200 lines of bash script, you know, config definitions, XML templates, kickstart files, all gone. It really felt good, because I was doing this piecewise and then I had to rebase and just put all this into one commit. And then when I looked at it, I was astonished. Okay, so there were the initial experiments that I might have mentioned at the beginning. Docker containers. You know, that should be easy, right? Because Docker is really easy. This was just crap. You know, the boxes for Vagrant, where Vagrant says you have to have a Vagrant user and various things. There's no Vagrant user in these boxes. They're just some sort of generic image. You know, if you try to upgrade the packages after you build the box, you get an RPM checksum failure on some systemd package. You know, I tried disabling SE Linux, and then I noticed, oh, well, you look at that. It's disabled SE Linux on the host. I wonder why that is. Do some, you know, DuckDuckGo searches. It's not namespaced. SE Linux isn't namespaced. Oh, well. And then I noticed that when I finally got it working and got some containers, you know, I do my magic SSH into container, my private networks aren't up. You know, I've configured them. They're not there. And at that stage, I just went, forget it. And, you know, about 2 weeks later, I just committed this stuff into a branch and put it aside so I could look at it later. So Michael said, what about LXC? His demo a few years ago used LXC, the Vagrant LXC plugin. Might get back and try that one day, because if that works better, then, you know, the astonishing thing here is that Docker is one of the built-in providers in Vagrant. And I was, yeah, anyway, enough. VirtualBox. Well, we decided to go with libvirt, so there's no good reason for using VirtualBox except that it is the official, you know, VM thing in Vagrant. So, of course, while I was researching how to use libvirt, I ended up crossing over and looking at some of the VirtualBox stuff and how to do some things in VirtualBox, including the shared storage. So, because I had three or four open tabs, I spent an hour or two just implementing the VirtualBox support, and then I just stashed it away in a branch, pushed it, and forgot about it. But in theory, things should work pretty well with VirtualBox as well. What's been lost? Nothing important. There was some... Back in the early days of AutoCluster, we had a product which was interacting with IBM's hierarchical storage management product. That stuff had undoubtedly bit rotted and hadn't worked for 5 or 10 years. So we just threw it away. It would be easy to get back, but decided in the first pass, we used to also set up VSFTPD and HTTPD, and CTDB would help to do failover for those things. But not of great value, so didn't keep them. We used to set up multipath for accessing the shared storage. We could probably still do that. But it's of no great value except to make it look more like a proper enterprise-y installation. Because there was a bug with libvirt and caching and various disk types in some version of RHEL 5, I ended up implementing iSCSI support in AutoCluster for the shared storage. And that got used by various things inside IBM, but by this time nobody's using it, and I didn't want to spend the time. It was very invasive and made things very complicated, so I threw that in the bin as well. What did we win? Well, it's now a lot more maintainable, right? It's of the order of 2,000 lines of stuff. It's stuff that's the structure of which is well documented. The Ansible stuff, should be readable by most people, even if they don't know Ansible. They could read that the best practices guide and be able to modify the Ansible without any hassles. The Vagrant file stuff is so small that it's laughable, and the Python script is less than 1,000 lines. So it's cool. Base images are someone else's problem. And that is the best thing about this rewrite. We now have, ease of adding other target platforms. So Debian cluster should be trivial. Ubuntu, whatever, pick your distro. But, doing the Debian family of distros once should just work, right? There may be minor differences between Debian and Ubuntu, but we should be able to get it general enough. It should be easy to add another cluster file system. We've got this integrated host setup, so you can just go auto cluster host setup and it runs an Ansible playbook, and it's currently pretty dumb and hasn't been structured along with the best practices thing. Probably get to that one day. When I try setting this up on my laptop, I'll probably find that I need to do some things. But currently we've only got a CentOS 7 playbook for setting up the host. Try and make some things more idempotent. If you run this thing a second time, a small number of things change, which, isn't best practice. But then we're not on some high-powered configuration management trip here. We just want to generate a cluster. So, it doesn't have to be right, but it's good to recognize that it's not perfect. Add some of the variations previously mentioned and improve the host setup. So what's going on over here? If we jump over to some other place, let me type clear to make sure that this is, so this is our tiny auto cluster configuration file for the cluster that we just built. We've got a list of nodes at the top. I guess it's so boring I shouldn't point to it. We've got an Active Directory node, 3 NAS nodes running Samba and NFS. We've got Do we really have a base node? I'd like to figure out what that means. We've got a test node and a node for building CTDB on. First IP address of any node in the cluster is 31. We've got a domain, we've got a work group, and everything else is sort of worked out from the fact that there is an Active Directory node. So the name server is just made to point to that. And the hardest thing is the repositories. We've got a bunch of places where we put packages that we've built for the Samba Active Directory, CTDB, Samba, these Spectrum Scales directory for the GPFS file system packages. And to make it fast, we mirror CentOS internally so that it doesn't take forever to install and we're not reliant on caching. You could decide not to use any of this, provided all your packages were in the distro and you were happy to build a cluster based on distro packages to just play with. So by default, it should just use the repositories defined in the base image, and that should work. Haven't done it though. And you know, we can go to a cluster node and do the sorts of things we did for local daemons as well. You know, we've got a 3-node CTDB cluster, and what we didn't have over there, does that command still exist? Yes, okay. So we're monitoring Samba and NFS and WinBind, and they're running, and we've joined the domain and all of that. So pretty trivial. Nice for testing. This talk brought to you by IBM Legal. Questions? No questions, very good. Ah, hang on, Garmin's got a question.
So what is this auto cluster? Like, who was it actually for? Is it, you know, sort of mostly for
developer testing?
What's really interesting, I think, like a little while back, I was sort of interested just in looking at CTDB because, well, it's just in the project and I've like it's part of the Samba sort of umbrella, and I've never really sort of played around with it, so I was just looking around. And how to actually set that up.
Yep.
And while I was doing that, you know, I was looking at different things like Ceph and things like that, and you know, looking through forums and of how to set stuff up. And I found that, you know, people when they asked about, you know, clustered network file systems, they just point them to the Ceph Ansible page, and then they'd be able to set up an NFS Ganesha just like that. And
yep.
You know, that's where everyone's just setting stuff up, and instead of Samba, which I thought was kind of disappointing, right?
Well, there are quite a few pieces to set up Samba.
Yeah.
You know, you want to set up WinBind, you got to set up CTDB, you got to set up Samba. You know, we had all that encoded into Hacky scripts, and now it's just Ansible playbooks. So, you know, if, for example, you wanted to set this up with CephFS, please pull the tree, create one or two YAML files, and we are done.
Yeah, so that looks really cool. Let's really get together and put some other backend, like open source backend, maybe even reconsider the container stuff with just local file system bind mounted.
Yep.
So to eliminate the actual cluster file system, and then let's put this into the CI for, I mean, nightly test runs.
That is the plan.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Docker stuff just burned me so badly.
Yeah, forget about Docker.
Yeah, I cried too many tears, and I'm not sure I can go back there.
This is why the next thing that is not Docker is Cryo, isn't it? Cryo.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, this makes sense.
So, thank you very much.
Okay.
But I think...
Thank you.